Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 75 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English and can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Podcast.de, Blue Sky and Instagram. There's also a music-based partner project on YouTube called HLITAI Music.
The topic of this episode.
This episode is about the battleships Scharnhorst and Gneisenau. And yes, I know I've already said enough to trigger some people, because they're probably shouting right now,
"Those were battle cruisers, not battleships."
Don't worry, I'll get to that right at the beginning.
Political agenda and background.
None.
The sources that were used.
Günter Kroschel, August Ludwig Evers, The German Fleet, 1848 to 1945, Loser Ising Publishing House, Wilhelmshaven, 1962, Third Revised Edition, 1964. Hans-Jürgen Hansen, The Ships of the German Fleets, 1848 to 1945, Bechtermünz Publishing House, Authorized Licensed Edition for Weltbild Publishing House, Augsburg, 1998. Caius Becker, The Kriegsmarine, Neuer Kaiser Publishing House, Klagenfurt, 2004. Caius Becker, Damned Sea, Gerhard Stalling Publishing House, Oldenburg, 1971. Erich Räder, My Life, Volume 2, from 1935 to Spandau, 1955. Fritz Schlichtenmeier Publishing House, Tübingen, 1957. Caius Becker, Eyes Through Night and Fog, The Radar Story, E.S. Mittler & Sohn GmbH, Herford, 1980, Janusz Pikalkiewicz, Naval Warfare, 1939 to 1945, Bechtermünz Verlag, Authorized Licensed Edition for Weltbild Verlag, Augsburg, 1998. Okay, let's get right to the debate. Were Scharnhorst and Gneisenau battleships, battle cruisers, or fast battleships? The fact is, the Kriegsmarine always and exclusively referred to these ships as battleships. Initially, the British Navy called them battle cruisers, but this designation changed to battleships during the war. In terms of characteristics, both ships certainly shared features of both battleships and battle cruisers, and therefore resemble the Anglo-American concept of the fast battleship. Let's break this down. The important thing to remember, and I can't stress this enough, is that there are no universally accepted definitions of battleships, battle cruisers, and fast battleships. If anyone claims otherwise, they are simply wrong. The definitions for these ship classes are always relative. Example. A battleship is generally described as a ship whose function is to fight and defeat the enemy's strongest units in a naval battle. For this purpose, it is equipped with the most powerful armament and the strongest armor available. In the magic triangle of firepower, protection, and maneuverability, the battleship prioritizes firepower and protection, sacrificing maneuverability in the process. An example of this is the American Colorado class. Very well armed with 406mm guns, very well armored, but very slow at 20 knots. However, going back a few decades, this definition also applies to the pre-dreadnoughts of the Braunschweig class. Even though they had to make do with significantly less armor and only 280mm guns. The definition of battleship is therefore not only relative, but also dependent on the era from which the ship originates. A battle cruiser prioritizes different aspects. It also uses the most powerful armament, but trades protection for speed. An example is HMS Hood. Powerful armament with 38cm guns, quite fast, but not particularly well armored. A fast battleship still prioritizes powerful armament and attempts to strike a balance between armor and speed. An example is the USS Iowa. Powerful armament, capable of speeds over 30 knots, and reasonably well armored. I will work with these definitions. So where do Scharnhorst and Gneisenau fit in? Their armament, with 9 28cm guns, was at the lower end of the battleship scale. The Deutschland-class pocket battleships had similar armament, although the Gneisenau and Scharnhorst possessed improved versions of the same 28cm guns. Contemporary battleships had main guns with calibers between 35.6 and 46cm. On the other hand, both ships were originally designed to be equipped with the same 38cm guns as the Bismarck, but these guns weren't ready quickly enough, which is why the 28cm guns were initially installed, with the option to upgrade later. Then there was the speed. Both ships could exceed 30 knots. This made them significantly faster than typical battleships of the time, and indeed comparable to battle cruisers. And then there was the armor. It was surprisingly tough. The side armor consisted of 35 centimeters of Wotan Hard type armor steel from 1930. That is significantly more than a battle cruiser had at that time. So one can understand why this debate exists. Scharnhorst and Gneisenau share characteristics of battleships, battle cruisers, and fast battleships. After all, Scharnhorst and Gneisenau are based on the design of both the Deutschland-class armored ships and the Ersatz-York-class battlecruisers from the First World War. Kroschel-Ever states on page 17, "The battleships Scharnhorst and Gneisenau were the first German capital ships since 1918, a new development that combined the features of earlier battleships and battlecruisers. Reflecting advances in shipbuilding, engineering, and weaponry, they exhibited significant innovations and improvements compared to their predecessors." Why do I call them battleships? Because that's what the Kriegsmarine called them, and that's sufficient for me. Let's begin with the history of the ships. Scharnhorst and Gneisenau started out in the Reichsmarine's records as armored ship D and E. They were originally intended to be only slightly improved ships of the Deutschland class. However, when the French responded to the German armored ships by building the Dunkerque class battleships, the design for the two new ships in Germany was revised. The ships were enlarged, their armament and armor significantly strengthened, and the result was Scharnhorst and Gneisenau. Initially, they were listed as improved 10,000-ton armored ships, but with the signing of the Anglo-German Naval Agreement of 1935, this disguise was lifted. Fully loaded, the ships displaced 38,100 tons. They were 235 meters long, 30 meters wide, and had a draft of 9.7 meters. 12 boilers produced approximately 152,000 horsepower. Other sources cite nearly 166,000 horsepower. And propelled the ships to a speed of around 31.5 knots. Unlike the armored ships, the Gneisenau and Scharnhorst used turbines, as diesel engines were unsuitable for ships of this size. The Scharnhorst had a range of 13,100 kilometers at 19 knots, while the Gneisenau's range was slightly less, at 11,500 kilometers at 19 knots. The crew consisted of 56 officers and 1,613 sailors. The main armament consisted of 9 28cm guns in 3 turrets, each with 3 barrels. They had a rate of fire of 3.5 rounds per minute and a maximum range of 40.9 kilometers. The relatively small caliber of the guns caused some concern for the German Navy. However, they also offered advantages over the larger guns used by the French, British, and Americans. On page 38 of his memoirs, Admiral Raeder, then Chief of the Navy, wrote the following. "After very thorough firing range trials, the 28cm gun designed for our ships, with its systematically improved armor-piercing shell, represented a significant advance and was so effective that it was considered entirely adequate compared to the armor protection of the Dunkerque class. In addition, it had a considerable superior rate of fire compared to the French 33cm quadruple turrets. My experts had also taken the position that it would be virtually impossible on the French ships to fully exploit the theoretical firepower of the quadruple turrets with turret salvos without causing serious structural damage to these relatively lightly built vessels. This view was later confirmed by reports of the trials of the French ships." The secondary armament consisted of 12 15-centimeter guns. They could fire 6 to 8 rounds per minute and had a maximum range of 23 kilometers. The anti-aircraft armament comprised 14 10.5-centimeter guns, 16 37-millimeter guns, and 10, later 16, 20-millimeter guns. The number of light 20-millimeter guns varied, however, and was increased to as many as 38 in later upgrades. Some of these were mounted in quadruple turrets. Later, six 533mm torpedo tubes were installed, compatible with the G7A torpedo. This torpedo had a range of 7.5 km at a speed of 40 knots and carried a 280 kg warhead. The ships carried three or four Arado AR-196 seaplanes. These had a two-man crew, were powered by a 947 horsepower engine, and had a top speed of 311 kilometers per hour. Their range was 1,080 kilometers. Armament consisted of two 20mm cannons, two 7.92 mm machine guns, one of which was defensively mounted facing rearward, and two 50 kilogram bombs. Both ships also had two Seetakt radar systems with a maximum range of 25 kilometers. However, under operational conditions, their range was usually less. They were initially considered rather poor ocean-going vessels, primarily due to their bows. They were very bow-heavy and took on a lot of water when pitching, that is, when sailing head-on through heavy seas. The stern was also known to get very wet in heavy seas. Furthermore, both ships lost a significant amount of speed when turning. The Scharnhorst, named after the Prussian general Gerhard Johann von Scharnhorst, was laid down in Wilhelmshaven on June 15, 1935. She was launched on October 3, 1936 and commissioned on January 7, 1939. The Gneisenau, named after the Prussian general August Neidhardt von Gneisenau, was laid down in Kiel on May 6, 1935, and launched on December 8, 1936. She was commissioned on May 21, 1938. Especially in English-speaking circles, there is sometimes the theory that the G in Gneisenau is silent and not pronounced, and that the name should therefore be pronounced Gneisenau. Even in debates with Germans, this theory is sometimes stubbornly maintained. Apart from a few H letters, there are actually no silent consonants in the German language, as for example in Thron, and virtually none at the beginning of words. Therefore, it is perfectly acceptable to speak of the Gneisenau. During sea trials, several problems were discovered on board the Gneisenau, leading to water ingress at the bow and subsequent electrical damage. The bow therefore had to be redesigned. This work was completed in September 39, just as the war began. The same modifications were carried out on the Scharnhorst, delaying her entry into service until November 39. On September 4, 1939, the Gneisenau was attacked by British Wellington bombers, but was not hit. At the end of November 39, the Scharnhorst, the Gneisenau, the cruiser Köln, and nine destroyers put to sea and operated between Iceland and the Faroe Islands. During this operation, the British auxiliary cruiser Rawalpindi was sunk. The Allies then pursued the German force. The core of the Allied force consisted of the British battleships HMS Nelson and HMS Rodney, the battlecruiser HMS Hood, and the French battleship Dunkerque. However, the German ships managed to break away at high speed and reached Wilhelmshaven safely. There they had to be repaired, as the high-speed passage in rough seas had caused some damage. By January 1940, both ships were operational again and set sail for sea trials in the Baltic Sea. Their next deployment took place in April 1940 during the occupation of Norway. The Gneisenau and Scharnhorst escorted the convoy bound for Narvik and Trondheim. The convoy consisted of the heavy cruiser Admiral Hipper and 14 destroyers. The ship successfully repelled a British air attack. On the evening of April 8th, the two battleships separated from the convoy to provide cover from a greater distance. In the early morning hours of April 9th, They encountered the British battlecruiser HMS Renown and several British destroyers. In the ensuing naval engagement, the Gneisenau was hit and damaged. Its aft gun turret was knocked out and there were 6 fatalities on board. The Gneisenau didn't score hits on the Renown and the Scharnhorst's gunfire was particularly inaccurate due to radar damage. Ultimately, the two battleships had to withdraw at high speed, sustaining further damage in the process. While the Scharnhorst was repaired without incident, the Gneisenau struck a mine near Kiel on May 5th, causing serious damage. Both ships were operational again by the end of May. On June 4th, both battleships, along with the heavy cruiser Admiral Hipper and 4 destroyers, sailed for Norway. Their objective was to disrupt Allied supplies to Narvik and support the German troops there who were under pressure. On June 8th, a tanker and a freighter were sunk. The Hipper and the destroyers then headed for Trondheim for resupply, while the battleships continued their operations. Late in the afternoon of June 8th, the two battleships unexpectedly encountered the British aircraft carrier HMS Glorious and her 2 escort destroyers Ardent and Acasta. The Glorious was hit early and was therefore unable to launch any aircraft. The destroyers attempted to disrupt the Germans with smoke screens, but the battleships were able to fire accurately using their radar. Ultimately, all 3 British ships were sunk. However, the Scharnhorst was hit by a torpedo from the Acasta, causing considerable damage. A 14-meter hole allowed 2,500 tons of water to enter the ship. The aft gun turret was damaged and 48 men were killed. The ship listed had a draft of 1 extra meter and could only travel at 20 knots. The Scharnhorst was therefore forced to withdraw. She underwent makeshift repairs in Trondheim and then sailed to Germany. She was attacked several times by British bombers but sustained no further damage. The repairs took about 6 months and she was not operational again until January 1941. This torpedo hit saved an Allied convoy transporting troops and equipment back to Great Britain from Narvik, as well as the Norwegian royal family and the Norwegian state treasury, which was aboard the cruiser HMS Devonshire, less than 80 kilometers away. The Gneisenau remained in Norwegian waters, but never encountered the enemy again. On June 20th, she was torpedoed by the British submarine HMS Clyde. Like her sister ship, she had to undergo makeshift repairs in Trondheim and then sailed back to Germany. The British also attempted to sink her during the crossing but were unable to locate her. The Gneisenau was not operational again until the end of 1940. At the end of January 41, both ships successfully broke through the British blockade and entered the Atlantic, where they were able to wage war on British freighters. By March 41, they had captured a total of 22 freighters. They then put into the French port of Brest. However, Brest proved to be a trap for the 2 ships, as they frequently suffered British air attacks there. The Scharnhorst was therefore transferred to La Rochelle. On July 24, 41, the Scharnhorst was severely damaged in a successful air raid and had to undergo 4 months of repairs in the dry dock in Brest. The Gneisenau was hit by a torpedo bomber on April 6 and severely damaged. The Gneisenau also had to go into dry dock. There, on the night of April 9th to 10th, she was hit by 4 bombs, which killed 72 sailors and injured 90 others. The Gneisenau underwent some modifications in dry dock, including the installation of additional 20mm anti-aircraft guns. During its time in dry dock, the Gneisenau was repeatedly bombed but sustained no further damage. In January 42, the decision was made to transfer the ships back to Germany. They were simply too vulnerable in Brest and ultimately offered no added value to the German Navy, as they were unable to put to sea due to damage and the threat of air raids. Therefore, on the night of February 11th to 12th, 1942, they were to make a surprise breakout through the channel between Great Britain and France and return safely to Germany under heavy fighter escort. This strategy had certain advantages and disadvantages. Among the advantages were the short travel time of just 1 day, the proximity to German bases in France, which allowed for strong Luftwaffe support, and the element of surprise. The channel was considered safe British territory, and the very idea of a breakout seemed unrealistic. The British would hardly expect such a move. Among the disadvantages was the proximity to the British coast, which would necessitate a heavy deployment of the British Navy, the British Air Force, and British coastal batteries. Furthermore, at a certain point, the ships would be visible from the British coast, making a completely secret voyage impossible. During this breakout attempt, the heavy cruiser Prince Eugen escorted the two battleships so that all three heavy vessels could be transported back to Germany in one go. As an alternative to this risky maneuver, Hitler had ordered the ships scrapped on sight, a measure Admiral Raeder refused. In English, this operation is called Channel Dash, and in German, Operation Cerberus. On February 11, 1942, at 11 p.m., the three ships left Brest and reached the entrance to the channel an hour later. Traveling at a high speed of 27 knots, they stayed close to the French coast. A large number of German fighter aircraft protected the ships with absolute radio silence and extremely low-level flying to evade British radar. Around 12:30 p.m., the ships passed through the Strait of Dover. They were first attacked by British aircraft 30 minutes later, but the German fighters repelled the attacks. At 3:31 p.m., the Scharnhorst struck a magnetic mine, and the explosion caused extensive damage. The ship lost power for 20 minutes, and over 1,200 tons of water flooded the vessel. After half an hour, the ship was able to resume its journey at 27 knots, albeit with a slight list. Further RAF air attacks were unsuccessful, but so intense that the anti-aircraft guns glowed red hot that evening, and one 20mm gun even shattered. At 10:34 p.m., the Scharnhorst struck another mine, which again caused a power outage and brought another 300 tons of water into the ship. Initially at only 10 knots, then at a more manageable 14 knots, the ship was able to continue its voyage. The Scharnhorst first reached Wilhelmshaven and 2 days later Kiel, where it was repaired until July 1942. The Gneisenau also struck a mine and sustained minor damage. It stopped for 30 minutes, but was then able to resume its journey. Near Brunsbüttel, she ran aground on an underwater wreck and suffered minor hull damage. She eventually arrived safely at Kiel. The Channel breach was a severe humiliation for the British Navy. An inquiry leveled serious accusations, particularly against Coastal Command. The moral fallout was especially devastating, as the British Navy had always maintained that no enemy fleet could ever break through their channel in wartime. In Janusz Pikalkiewicz's book, Naval Warfare, page 187 quotes the Associated Press of February 15, 1942, with the following report from London. The breakthrough of the German battleships through the channel has led to a heated debate in English naval circles. The main question raised was what benefit the bombing of the naval base at Brest had served, a campaign that resulted in the loss of nearly 100 aircraft without achieving anything decisive. Furthermore, the question was raised as to how the German squadron could have been sighted only at 11 a.m., shortly before its passage through the Dover-Calais Strait. The American Baltimore Sun reported on the same day, quoted from the same book, page 188, "This operation by the German Navy was carried out in such a way that one can only wish American commanders would act the same way in a similar situation." Strategically, however, the operation was merely a successful retreat. The German ships escaped the dangerous air raids in Brest, and were now completely encircled in the Norway-Baltic Sea area. Operations in the Atlantic were only possible for the U-boats. The Gneisenau's repairs had already been completed by the end of February 42, and the ship was therefore scheduled to sail for Norway at the beginning of March. However, on the night of February 26 to 27, there was a heavy British air raid. Bomb hits caused massive secondary explosions in the bow, which ejected the forward turret from the barbette and caused extreme damage to the bow. The ship also suffered 112 dead and 21 wounded. Instead of repairing the Gneisenau, it was now to be refitted with the 38cm guns of the Bismarck. For this purpose, it was decommissioned, made seaworthy as far as possible, and then transferred to Gotenhafen. the crew was reassigned to the U-boats. The Scharnhorst also had problems. During sea trials in the Baltic Sea after the repairs, several technical issues surfaced, which weren't resolved until January 43. Thus, 1942 more or less passed both ships by. It wasn't until March 43 that the Scharnhorst joined the German fleet in northern Norway. At the beginning of 43, the Gneisenau was finally repaired sufficiently to begin the conversion to 38 cm guns. However, due to the disastrous performance of the surface fleet against an Allied convoy in the Arctic Ocean during Operation Rainbow, Hitler halted all capital ship projects. Instead of being refitted, the Gneisenau was completely disarmed and remained in Gotenhafen as a hulk. Had she simply been repaired instead of refitted, she could have been operational by then and could have sailed to Norway with the Scharnhorst. However, its artillery was assigned, among other things, to coastal defense in Norway, where one of her 28 cm gun turrets can still be visited near Trondheim today. In September 43, Scharnhorst Tirpitz and 9 destroyers attacked Spitsbergen, which was held by 3 Norwegian forces. The island's installations were severely damaged, but it was not occupied. In December 43, Grand Admiral Dönitz decided to deploy Scharnhorst against the next Allied convoy bound for Murmansk. However, Scharnhorst had to operate more or less alone, as all of the Navy's heavy cruisers were operating in the Baltic Sea, and Tirpitz had been damaged by air attacks. On December 22nd, a convoy of about 20 ships, escorted by cruisers and destroyers, was sighted. Dönitz ordered an aggressive engagement of the convoy, but instructed that the battle be broken off if superior enemy forces appeared. The polar night, with approximately 45 minutes of daylight and 6 hours of twilight, resulted in poor visibility, which limited Scharnhorst's capabilities and made her onboard radar all the more crucial. However, the British radar systems were superior to the German ones, which worried the commanding officer, Rear Admiral Erich Bey. The Scharnhorst left port accompanied by 5 destroyers. The British were aware of the ship's movements, having intercepted and decrypted its radio transmissions. Admirals Burnett and Fraser prepared their strategy. The 3 cruisers Norfolk, Belfast, and Sheffield would engage the Scharnhorst head-on, while the battleship Duke of York, whose presence was unknown to the Kriegsmarine, the cruiser Jamaica, and 4 destroyers would cut off its retreat. To approach undetected, the Scharnhorst had deactivated its onboard radar. However, since the British knew the Scharnhorst's intentions, a surprise attack was impossible. Without active radar, the Scharnhorst was unable to detect the cruiser Belfast, which picked up the Scharnhorst with its own radar and began to approach. Together with the Norfolk, the Belfast opened fire and destroyed the Scharnhorst's forward radar system with its second salvo. This left the German battleship with only its aft radar, which was mounted lower and had limited power. But even with the superior forward radar, the Scharnhorst would have had a radar range of at best 25 kilometers, while the British could detect it from a distance of over 40 kilometers. The Scharnhorst attempted to evade the cruisers, but failed. However, the German battleship managed to hit the Norfolk, destroying both its radar and some of its guns. The British cruisers then kept their distance and waited for the battleship Duke of York, while the German destroyer searched unsuccessfully for the convoy. Finally, Rear Admiral Bey ordered the mission aborted, dismissed the destroyers, and turned back. Several hours later, the Duke of York reached the Scharnhorst, which was now sailing alone and without destroyer escort. In the very one-sided engagement, the Scharnhorst, due to the radar situation, fought almost blindly against the superior opponent and ultimately had little chance. After a long battle, she finally sank. Of the 1,968 crew members, only 36 were rescued. This operation made it clear to the Kriegsmarine leadership that the use of heavy ships without adequate radar was no longer viable. With the sinking of the Scharnhorst, the Tirpitz was the last capital ship in northern Norway. It was subjected to constant attacks by the Royal Air Force and Royal Navy until it was sunk. The Gneisenau, on the other hand, remained unused in Gotenhafen. At the end of March 45, shortly before the arrival of the Red Army, it was sunk in the harbor as a block ship next to the old Zeringen. In 1951, it was raised by the Poles and scrapped.
A few finishing words.
Comparing Germany's heavy capital classes in World War II, the Deutschland-class pocket battleships, the Scharnhorst and Gneisenau duo, and the Bismarck and Tirpitz duo, the Scharnhorst and Gneisenau were arguably the most successful as a team. Individually, however, the pocket battleships were the most successful, while the Bismarck and Tirpitz had rather dismal existences. The Scharnhorst and Gneisenau were successful when operating together. In that capacity, they posed a very dangerous threat to the Allies, tying down considerable Allied forces. Individually, however, they were rather unfortunate. Without her sister ship, the Scharnhorst operated helpless in the Arctic Ocean, and the Gneisenau herself languished as an empty shell in Gotenhafen. The decision to refit her with 38-centimeter guns instead of simply repairing her was ultimately a grave mistake, one that should not have been made given the resource constraints of 1942. Had the Gneisenau been able to assist the Scharnhorst at the North Cape in December 43, the duel with the Duke of York and the rest of the British squadron would likely have unfolded differently and been far less one-sided. Stripping the Gneisenau hull and then abandoning it ultimately was like a present for the Allies, and the reinforcement of coastal defenses in Norway was more or less pointless.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.